Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
It's Thursday, which means as you prepare for the end of your work week, it's time for another taping of Listen In with KNN. Now, today's show is dedicated to the diehard Washington Redskins fans right here in the DMV and throughout the nation. It's time to hail to the Redskins as I welcome in special guest Robert Doerr, a lifelong fan of the Washington Redskins and a current employee. I'm excited to welcome Robert in celebration of the fact that November, yes, November, is National American Indian Heritage Month. All right, that means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
As I like to do every show, I'm kicking it off with my favorite segment, Kelsey's Do Good Sportsperson of the Week. Now, today I'm joined by the founder of Go Virtual Green, Mr. Jeremy Newkirk. Jeremy, welcome to today's show.
Hello, Kelsey. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for making time. And, I mean, just tell the people a little bit about what Go Virtual Green is.
Go Virtual Green is an initiative that stemmed from, you know, at-risk youth and, you know, minority people that's disadvantaged, you know, in the world to have access to STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. And we also do STEAM, too, which is science, technology, engineering, art, and math, introducing, you know, entertainment and things like that, but from an engineering and production standpoint.
Wonderful. And, you know, I have to say when I first met you, I remember it was back out a couple years ago now at the sporting event. I remember it was Team Durant there. We had Mama Durant there. We had Wanda. We had Lynn Bias' mother. And I was drawn to you because I'm like, oh, my gosh, here we are at a sporting event, and we have a guy who's trying to introduce these student athletes to careers in STEM. So, I mean, tell me a little bit about your connection to sports and, you know, why do you think it's so important for student athletes to also get exposed to different STEM careers?
Absolutely. Well, I have two sons, and they love football, but they also know I'm all about skill building. Just like you prepare children to skill build in the arenas of sports, as it be football, baseball, basketball, those are still skills that, you know, kids are developing to, you know, further their career if they choose to, you know, go that route. But
right.
Also, you know, what is plan B or maybe plan A if you're introduced to it and aware of it, like STEM, like science. Everything has science, technology, engineering, and math and art, you know, even as we market, you know, products out in the world. So just having, you know, children introduced to that and have those type of skill sets early too in life, you know, was the thing that drew me to really push this initiative. But we can get people active early and going, then, you know, that's less crime, that's less, you know, idle minds, all of that stuff.
Right. Wonderfully said. And I mean, just tell people a little bit about your background so they can kind of understand, you know, what led you to creating Go Virtual Green.
Absolutely. Well, I always loved music and engineering and production. And so I got into technology when I was really young, digital audio workstations and things of that nature, which kind of led me into, you know, email and internet. And I got fascinated with that. So I got a college degree in computer science, but also maintained, you know, doing sound engineering and music production and working with different artists and people and just, you know, bridging the gap between, you know, cultures and communities through technology and through music. And then eventually I said, well, man, we could do the same thing with education. So I started blending cultures and technology with sports, you know, partnering with people such as Derek Stanton and those folks pushing education as the new sport. You know, it's the new skill. It's the new global skill that our youth need to have early, too, just like we're training them up in the sports in the, you know, arena early. We need to train them up in technology. There are going to be millions of jobs by 2020 that, you know, only 18-20% of our population as a whole can even qualify for right now, which shifts those jobs, high-paying jobs, too, that you don't even need a college degree. You can have certification and job experience, you know, not that I'm demeaning a college degree, but I'm just saying vocational-type skills that could pay well into the, you know, six figures that we should be training our children for.
Wonderful. You said, you know, I think it's so important, as you said, that people have those skills. I know if there are people who are like me, you know, how can people find out more or get their kids involved in this initiative, Go Virtual Green, that you have?
Absolutely. They can go to govirtualgreen.org. That's
okay.
G-O, virtual, the word virtual, green, G-R-E-E-N.org. And Go Virtual Green stands for refreshing your mind online, you know, and we're just an asset-based community of green thoughts sitting in the cloud. So we invite you to come out and check us out and see what we're all about.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you, and congratulations once again for being awarded this week's Kelsey's Do Good Sports Person of the Week. And with
I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so much. And with that, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. So stay tuned for more.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with K&N, where we give you sports talk like you've never heard before. Now, without further ado, it's time to welcome my special guest to the show, Mr. Robert Dorr. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for coming. I have to say, I miss seeing you at FedEx Field. I need to get back down there.
You know what? You do. It's been a phenomenal crowd this season, and everything's been electric. So, looking forward to seeing you again.
Well, thank you. You know, I can't get back. Like you said, the fans are incredible. And so if you guys don't know this voice you're hearing of Robert Dorr, I don't think you're a true Redskins fan, because he is at every single game on stadium game days, and he's just one incredible person to know. But for those of you that don't know him, let me go into a short bio about my special guest. Robert L. Dorr, his name means rides at the door, Jr., is a member of the Blackfeet Nation and is a private business developer and entrepreneur. Mr. Dorr brings over 20 years of experience in private and public business sectors. He has worked with educational institutions as well as tribal, local, state, and national government agencies. Robert has extensive public affairs and leadership experience, management, media, public relations, and business development skills. So yes, basically he does everything. He is a former international ambassador representing internationally on issues facing Native Americans of the United States and throughout the world. Robert sits on the National Board of Directors for the American Indian Business Leaders. Mr. Dorr is an educated professional whose background includes natural resource management, business management, marketing, and master's degree in business and project management. Robert is one of the few Native Americans to work in the National Football League and currently is the manager of guest experience for the Washington Redskins at FedEx Field here in the nation's capital. So, Robert, I mean, I go into this just incredible bio of yours, and I know you probably even cut stuff out because you're such an incredible person. But first, before we get any further, can you explain to people what your job means, that manager of guest experience? What does that mean in layman terms?
Well, whoever wrote that, I've got to make sure I give a fist pound to, because that sounds pretty cool.
It did.
That guy, I met that guy once, I think. But in all seriousness, my job, the short version is to make sure that the thousands of people that visit FedEx Field leave here with a positive experience. So I make sure that everybody has a smile on their face. And my primary responsibility is everything outside the white lines of the field and guest experience. So I'm the manager of guest experience, and I handle all the game day staff. And we just basically work real hard to make sure that everybody's enjoying their visit to FedEx Field, whether it's a football game or a concert, soccer event, or other special events that we have at the stadium at FedEx Field.
Right. So basically put, you just make sure people have a good time, which is incredible, because who doesn't want to have a good time? And honestly, I don't ever think I've left someone leaving FedEx Field who didn't have a good time. And that's regardless of the scoreboard at the end of the game or the concert or whatever they're leaving. So you're doing a great job in that aspect. And I have to say, it's an honor to have you on, because it is Native American Heritage Month. And so that's why I really wanted to have you on. And of course, you work for a team that has a Native American as its mascot. But before I go into the whole thing that we're going to be talking about today, tell me what you're doing right now outside of working for the Washington Redskins. Like, what's keeping you busy? What's your hobbies? What do people need to know about you?
Oh, goodness. That's an interesting question because, you know, football is life right now. During the season,
right.
the days are long. I work in the operations department, so my team here and the people that you know, we put in long hours, so there's really, outside of that, I do have my family that that I spend a lot of time with. So I coach my son's flag football team, and his team, of course, is the Redskins, and I try to find a nice balance to what we do here at the workplace. But, yeah, I do have a couple hobbies on the side that, like a normal person's people do. So.
Right. We know you're one of us.
Yeah, you know, the work-life balance thing that everybody tries to somewhat shoot for is my goal, too. But at the same time, you know, I'm dedicated to my craft here for the Redskins and love what I do. Absolutely love what I do and the people in the organization that I represent. So I don't know if you really can call it a job if you love what you're doing, right?
Hey, I completely agree. I don't call this a job. It's just me having a good time getting out sports topics, you know, with incredible people. But now I want to talk about, you know, you're a proud member of the Blackfeet Nation. And so before I get into the talk any further, can you kind of explain what is the Blackfeet Nation and, you know, like how does that group relate to other Native American groups that in the United States?
Well, you know, I think it's important that people understand the history and it all ties in together. So I might go on a short little ramble here. The background and set up how this all came to be and Native American imagery and sports is very important. But my background starts back on the Blackfeet Reservation in northwestern Montana. Traditionally, our people were Plains Indians. For years, we went from southern Canada down to Montana and Wyoming, what we consider Montana and Wyoming today. So I have family on both sides. The tribe has four bands of Blackfeet or Blackfoot if you're in Canada. We have three bands up in Canada. And my grandfather is part of the band that came down into America thousands of years ago. And you had told everybody out there that my name is Door. It is. The short version is Door, but my real legal last name is Rides at the Door. And our name and our history is rich within our tribe. So Rides at the Door is actually he who rides from the enemy's door with the best horse. And so in the translation, you can't put that in English, but there's a great story behind the history of how many Native Americans have their name. So the broader picture is Blackfeet are one of 567 federally recognized tribes in America today. So you have almost 600 different tribes, and they all are different and unique in their own respect. They have unique cultures, governments, tribal governments, policies, procedures. They all have difference of views on a number of variety of things. They can govern themselves, that are on sovereign trust land or tribal land. They're essentially a state within a state. Robert Gore, the guy that you're listening to right now, was born in Montana and raised on the Blackfeet Reservation. And it's just adjacent to Glacier National Park. So my backyard was something that you see in magazines if you're city folk. With the peaks and the valleys of Glacier Park. And that's where
it's
I grew
beautiful.
Up. It's absolutely beautiful. Lions and bears and tigers, oh my, but it's truly nature. If you took it, and I tell everybody this story, if you take every person in the state of Montana and spread them out, there'd be one person about every 6 miles. So there's a lot of dirt between light bulbs in the state of Montana.
Oh, wow. So different from here in Washington, D.C.
Right. In fact, the stadium houses about as many people as the biggest city in Montana. Billings, Montana has about 100,000 people. So
laugh
about where I went to college is about as many people as we fit in the stadium. So,
that just really puts it into perspective.
Right? It does. But getting back to the Blackfeet and who we are as a people, we were titled the Raiders of the Plains by John C. Ewers. And that's a book that about the Blackfeet, about my people. I was raised there, and my parents are rich in the cultural and spiritual ways of the tribe. They were keepers of the thunder medicine pipe. To us, the springtime is when the thunder first come, and that's our new year. And so I was raised in the cultural ways of our tribe. And I was really proud of who I was as a Native American guy growing up, young man growing up. My dad was very strong on the values and the spiritual ways of the tribe. And so we were fierce fighters. We prided ourselves on being fierce warriors. We protected our land fiercely. We had one of the larger land bases of all the tribes in America and in Native American history. And we basically shot first and asked questions later. So we were fierce warriors, insurmountable odds, never die, never give up. That was really, you know, we were noted for. And in fact, Lewis and Clark came to our territory, and part of our history, it's well documented. They try to come through Blackfeet country, and we didn't take to outsiders very well. The reason they were able to pass through Blackfeet country is because of their slave named York, African American, that we consider the black man, or the color black, and our four sacred colors, black is one of our highest, if not the highest. So this was truly a man that we, you know, his skin color we considered in high regard. So they were able to pass through somewhat safely through, you know, Blackfeet country, but we were fierce. There's a couple Hell's Gate is what they call it in Montana, because we as Blackfeet would take our enemies and basically make a little note to everybody and hang their and there was a lot of carnage and so we, you know, when people would come through this pass through the mountains, it was all see all this carnage. They said, this is Hell's Gate. Well, Blackfeet were mean. We were like that. So we're pretty fierce.
Right.
So we carry a lot of pride, a lot of fight with us. And so that's kind of a little bit of history about the Blackfeet and who we are today. We're still a strong tribe. We peaked about 75,000 numbers, and then through the historical the history of the tribe, through smallpox and all the other trials and tribulations we faced, and sicknesses and diseases, we were wiped out to about 15,000 to 20,000. So our numbers were significantly reduced.
Right.
So we have about 18,000 tribal members. And tribes in themselves each have individual enrollment blood quantum issues. So this is something the federal government had set up with us, where we, as Native Americans, are one of the few people where you actually have, or like almost like a breed of an animal, where the blood quantum, you have to prove how much blood quantum you are to be federally recognized by the United States government.
Wow.
We also were fighting for this country per capita. Even today, we are we have the most veterans per capita of any minority that fight for this country. We're fierce warriors. So that warrior mentality I talked about carried over in today. Many of our men and women serve in the United States Air Force, Marines, Navy, Army. So they're proud warriors today that carry on that tradition. So, you know, we come from a long line of pride and bravery. That's who we are as Blackfeet people, and I'm proud of that. So growing up in that environment, that's who you were. You knew what it means to be Blackfeet is those core values, you know, knowing where you come from, the pride. And that's the kind of a long version of who we are as Blackfeet. But really, our Blackfeet name, just some sidebar information, isn't really what we call ourselves. That was something the settlers, when we first interacted, when we met with fur traders from the Hudson Bay Company, and we were exchanging furs and coats and blankets and what have you, the bottoms of our souls of the braves that we're meeting with the traders were black from the prairie fires that we had walked on. And so when we were meeting with them, they were described us as Blackfeet, right?
That right. The they just looked at the physical attribute. Wow. Interesting. I'm sure a lot of people don't know that. I think the history that you gave people is so important, because I feel like Native Americans are one of those groups that people fully don't understand. And of course, I think you're giving us stuff that you don't learn inside of a classroom, you know, textbook, when you're in school. So I really appreciate you taking the time out. And I want people to realize, you know, why I wanted you on this show, because I mean, you've lived it, you know, you're Native American. And that leads me to my next question. I mean, you talked about growing up on a reservation, but for people that, and I think most people wouldn't know what it is to grow up on a reservation, can you describe, like, what was life like growing up on that reservation that you spoke about?
Great question, because I love it. I thrive off of teaching people about our culture and who we are.
Right.
And really the strife. The reservation, the best way to put it, is similar to an inner city challenged environment. So you think of, you know, Chicago and Detroit, or, you know, some parts of D.C. That was the reservation I grew up in, where the economic factors minus two, unemployment could peak as high as 85% in some cases. So, you know, that's not normal. And during the Great Depression, I think as a country, we peaked around, you know, 20-30%. Whereas today in 2017, we're still have unemployment rates of about 50-70% on the reservation where I grew up. So the trials and tribulation that come with poverty are tough. It's a harsh environment. You throw in drugs and alcohol, which is difficult in itself to deal with. We have addiction issues. We have real issues that go on in our backyard, which is sometimes frustrating in my mind, because we seem to rally as a country around a lot of different causes, but we have an issue right in our backyard in America called reservations. We have housing issues. We have economic development issues. We have drugs and alcohol, suicide, teenage pregnancies. We our life expectancy on reservations is a fraction of what, you know, it is in mainstream America. So suicide prevention, teenage pregnancy, it's a harsh environment.
Right.
So finding the positive is why I'm so thankful for my parents. My parents have been married for almost 50 years. And they were able to raise me with the values to really lead, eventually lead, but keep the core values of who we are as Indian people. So I found healthier lifestyles. I didn't drink in high school. I didn't do drugs. I didn't smoke cigarettes. I chose sports. I chose, you know, a healthier lifestyle. And sports really provided me an opportunity to live a healthy lifestyle, but also a reprieve. And that sports also includes stuff on TV. So sports is huge. It was kind of our modern-day warfare. I'm tying this all together for you, Kelsey, is our modern-day warfare is we took pride as young men and Braves and Redskins people going out into the battlefield to beat our enemy. So in sports, in high school sports, high school basketball and football and cross-country, we took that warrior mentality into sports today. So it was really competitive, and so it was you were a basketball or a football player or a cross country runner on the Blackfeet Reservation, and we've had 16 state titles in a row for my life.
Wow, very incredible, very amazing. I think that's something people forget. I mean, I think about immediately when you said sports, you know, the sport of lacrosse came to my mind, which a lot of people don't know. You know, Native Americans started. And then you talked about how big it was, you know, on the reservation playing sports. So that leads me to my next question, though, Robert. I mean, how in the world, and for people that don't know you, I mean, you have to tell us, how in the world did you end up becoming, you know, a super fan of the Washington Redskins?
Well, that's a great story in itself. 3,000 miles from the middle of RFK or FedEx Field.
Right.
D.C. My dad was on the Tribal Business Council, and he took me out to D.C. for a trip, but he came home with a hat. It had a Redskins symbol on it. It had the logo on it, right? The logo we have today. You had said earlier in the interview that we had a mascot. We don't have a mascot. We have a logo. And so he came home, walked in, and I said, well, what's that, Dad? What's that hat all about? He says, son, this is the Redskins. This is the logo. This is Chief Two Guns Whitecap. They have a logo, the team, and then the nation's capital, based after our tribe. This guy is your chief. I said, wow. I was sold. Redskin, it fit. The R, Robert, Redskin, perfect. And now that's the chief of my tribe logo. That's who this imagery was based after. Are you serious? So I was sold. You could not tell me anything different. And it helped that when I was in about third, fourth grade, my mom, I forgot my jacket, you know, and we had a flag football game. And so she bought me this Redskin coat. And I had this really cool Redskin with a secret emblem, because the emblem, the logo, is my secret badge to secret powers, you know, as a kid. So that game, I went on to score 7 touchdowns for our team, had about 10 sacks, and just I thought it was magical. So at that moment, there's no way. So as the years progressed, all I did was watch, you know, the Redskins on TV at RFK, and I dreamed of one day going to a game at some point, you know, on the Redskins. Now remember, on the reservation, you don't have access to anything. So the games at the time, the Redskins were awesome. You know,
right.
they were beating everybody, and so they were on TV a lot, and you didn't have the internet. So I was researching in the local libraries, anything I can get on, from Jack Kent Cook to Joe Gibbs to any player you know on the roster. I could probably tell you the roster since 79 on.
Wow.
So I just anytime I wanted to learn about anything, it was always the Redskins first. Well, in that research, I found that the logo was in fact truly based after Chief Two Guns Whitecap. So Blackie Wetzel, the chairman of the National Congress of American Indians at the time, was in D.C. and met with the ownership for the Washington Redskins. And a little bit before that, we had a logo. It was an R, similar to the Green Bay Packers. Now, if you think about it, Vince Lombardi was our coach, and he liked – when he came from the Packers, he came to D.C., and he changed the logo to the R. So there was some similarities between the Green Bay R, our Green Bay G, and the Redskin R. Well,
okay.
Blackie Wetzel met with ownership and said, you know, if you're going to have a Native American themed team, you really should do
right.
it right. And I've got some pretty cool pictures you want to take a look at. And I'm paraphrasing how the meeting went, of course.
Right.
And they really, really liked the picture of Chief Two Guns Whitecap. So he's also the model that served for the Indian Head Nickel. And that became...
Okay.
At the height of the civil rights movement, at the tail end of it, 1972, our logo, which has been on our helmets for a long, long time. So that's
right.
the long version of how I became a Redskin fan.
Wow. I mean, no, that was just a great story. And, of course, I think now people can understand, because I think a lot of times, you know, you have one side saying, you know, no Native American support the Washington Redskins logo or their name, but then here you are saying, no, that's not true. You know, I grew up with it, and it was something that was proud. And you know, something that, you know, you supported, and I mean, you researched it, you did all the work that you needed to do. But now I have to ask you, I mean, how did this fandom transition into you working for the Washington Redskins organization?
You know, as a professional, you grow up, and my dad said, if you, I had long hair, if you cut your hair and learn to talk like the guy on the 5 o'clock news, become educated, you can go far, son. So I'll never forget that advice. And so I went through my life, worked my tail off. I wasn't perfect. I faced a lot of challenges to become educated. So getting my master's degree was really a feat in itself. And then I worked through private practice, through the ranks, and of course you build a network,
right?
And of professionals, Indian, non-Indian, throughout your career, and through that network, we were able to connect with the Redskin organization that were looking for help on learning about the culture of Native Americans. You know, who we are as people, who we are as Native Americans, the history, cultural. You know, because the momentum of the quote name issue was going on. And you know, it seemed like everywhere you turned, there was some sort of headline about Redskins name and what have you. So I wrote a piece on you know, how I felt as a fan, because I'm very passionate, like a lot of members of Redskins Nation are, about our team.
Right.
And I
mean, come to DC and you'll find diehards.
I've met some people. So so the organization called, read the piece, and said they'd like to talk to me and teach us about culture and teach us, you know, how we do things, you know, back home on the reservation, and share with us some insight of teaching us about culture. Because they'll be honest with you, we really didn't know here at the organization of what Native American cultural and activities were about.
Right.
So, and fast forward. They said, we have a position available. And I said, I would love to take that based on my merit. So we did. And so after a series of meetings and you know, meeting with some of the senior management here, we were able to combine forces with the cultural component, but also my educational background, my formal training in business and operations. So that all worked out. So it was a dream come true. I actually got to go to a game some years later, before I was employed, kind of backing up, I went to a game in RFK, and I got to meet members of the Redskins Nation. It was just awesome. It was beyond my wildest dreams. to sing at the top of my lungs was phenomenal. Because all the things I talked about before as a Native American, all the Native American imagery, the sports, Jim Thorpe was one of my favorite athletes of all times, and he was one of the greatest athletes of all time with history in the NFL. So I've always had a liking to the NFL. So when that dream came true of RFK attending my first game, it was just something beyond my wildest. And so I'll never forget that. So now my job today at FedEx Field for the Washington Redskins is to find people like that and also interact with people that are just like me, because I'm a fan first. I'm a Native American. I'm a fan of the Redskins organization. So it's not hard to show the passion I have every day in this stadium as my, quote, job. And so I find people that are looking to have that experience or share the experience, because our fans are awesome. We go to any city across the country. Our fans are phenomenal. Our following is insane.
It's so true. I mean, I feel like you see, just on the highway, you can even see, like, Redskins buses. And, I mean, go to the tailgates. You'll see all types of stuff, because these people, and these, I've always said Washington, D.C., Robert, is a football town. They support the Washington Redskins like none other. And for anyone that's traveled, you know that. And that's why, you know, they're one of the top grossing football organizations. Because I tell you, you do not mess with the Washington Redskins. They are there for their team through and through and through. And that's why I just love hearing, you know, your story of how you became one. Because I think everyone has an interesting story into how they became a fan, you know, of a particular team. But now, Robert, that takes me into, I mean, you said it, there's so much controversy over this name. And that's what I want to get into now, because, you know, quite frankly, I think it's something that we need to find an answer to. I don't know if we will find one soon, but, you know, I think we need to talk about it. I think that's the only way problems can get solved. And I think that's the only way you can kind of get the other side to hopefully hear you out. So, I mean, as I had mentioned, we have seen Native American groups portrayed as logos and mascots for sporting teams throughout this country's history. Like, I mean, most people can probably name at least one team that is named after a Native American or a Native American group. But one of the groups, NCAI, has had a longstanding opposition to harmful, quote, Indian sports mascots. According to their website, they are the nation's oldest, largest, and most representative American Indian and Alaska Native advocacy organization. NCAI has held a long and clear position against derogatory and harmful stereotypes of Native American people, including sporting mascots in media and popular culture. I know you said you refer to the Redskins, you know, symbol as a logo, but I'm just curious. I mean, let's think about the different teams. Of course, you have the Cleveland Indians. You have, you know, a bunch of different teams. Do you personally see a problem with this, or do you really think sporting teams are doing this to honor Native Americans, who, of course, were here first in this country?
You know, if you look back on the history, and I've done the history myself,
right,
and it is something that captured my, you know, attention with Native American imagery. You know, Jim Thorpe, like I talked about, was really something that, in my mind, was my hero. He was a Native guy. He was like me, that I could aspire to be like, right? And so if you look at Jim's, his roots and ties to the inception of the NFL, the reason the Canton Bulldogs signed him was because he was the biggest name at the time. So you go back and look at why the Hall of Fame for the National Football League, this billion-dollar industry today, is headquartered in Canton, Ohio, for example. A lot of people don't realize it was because Jim Thorpe signed with the Canton Bulldogs. And so a lot of history and a lot of roots go back to Canton, Ohio. So Native Americans, Native American imagery, the pride and the ferocity and the bravery that we had as warriors on the battlefield carried over. So when you were creating a theme back in the day, now you got to keep in context the time frame and the cultural geography of what goes on at the time. So when these Native American imagery theme teams came about, they wanted you wanted to pick something cool, something fierce, something that would represent you on the playing field, on the basketball court, you know, what have you. So, you know, when these came about, they were more, in my mind, in my research, found that they really were focused on the positive aspects, the pride, the bravery, you know, the warrior mentality that goes forward in battle. And that's really what, on the playing field of a football field, it's a battle. It's a battle. Right. It's you know, man on man. And so that's really where, in my mind, where the Native American imagery stems from on a lot of sports teams. Now, fast forward to today and their views of it, and they vary, and I respect it. The thing about everybody has a right to their opinion, and I
exactly
certainly,
right.
You know, and that's what made this country beautiful, is the right to have an opinion. And so we have these teams today that I think that could use a little bit of culture and understanding over the team that they represent. So if they do like we did with the Redskins and took the time, because we as an organization went out to reservations, we visited almost 30 reservations, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Long overdue, we'll admit that, long overdue, but we took the time and learned about the people on our helmets. They took
right.
the time, and I've constantly talked to my staff about who we are and the Native American cultural components of it. So really, I'm educating my staff and doing my part internally, trying to make sure that people understand culturally who we are. And I also think it's a phenomenal opportunity to tell our story of Native Americans. I think we could really talk more about the real issues going on in the reservation. And I'll be honest with you, my team did not influence the impact on a negative side. It was more of a positive side. And I'll give you an example. When the Redskins lost, it meant I had to work harder. I had to work harder in school. I had to work harder on the court, in the weight room. So it motivated me. I used the Redskins as kind of, I wanted to make the NFL. So the Redskins to me was a symbol of hope and something to drive for. I wanted to go to the NFL or the NBA. So the imagery itself is something I gravitated to, and there's a lot of Native Americans that feel the same. You know, there's a lot of pride that they have towards, whether it's the Redskins or whoever. My particular story is awesome because I get to live my dream. In this country,
right.
I go from where my roots are, if I ever took anybody back to my hometown, to mm-hmm. see where I come from and to work for the team. That's a dream come true. My daughter recently says, Dad, I don't like wishing because wishing's never come true. I said, that's not true, Olivia, because your dad's dream has come true. So don't ever tell me your dreams don't come true. And this wonderful organization helped my dreams come true.
Right. I mean, I love what you just said. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you wanted to talk about, you know, some of the things, you know, with the imagery and the name. To me, it was never an issue. A lot of people I grew up with, it was never an issue. It was a non-issue.
Okay.
But the bigger issue for me, we have many issues, and that's not to say that people that feel that this is important or that is important is any less than the other. But for me,
right.
I really gravitated to sports Native American imagery.
Okay. Well, I guess what you're saying is, like, you know, you like that this brings more attention to the real issues that you're saying the reservations are having. And you're saying the Washington Redskins organization, you know, took the time out, as you said, to go to the reservation 30 and really find out more about the culture. So you're saying they kind of have done their part. But I'm curious, for people that don't know, was it the entire, like, front office that went, you know, to these reservations? Or who exactly went, if you know, from the Washington organization? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's well documented that we had, you know, the ownership visit the reservation. So it's no secret that we took the time to go out, and senior management went out. And yeah, we've gone out. It's not been some it's been high-ranking officials within our organization, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's a good point. And then also, I want to bring up something. So this person who I actually had a chance to meet, and I know you did, unfortunately passed away last year, but the person that the Washington Redskins were very proud of was Chief Z. Williams. And for people that don't know him, he was a huge, huge, huge super fan of the Washington Redskins, and he was one of the Skins' unofficial mascots at home games for nearly 40 years. If you didn't see him before, he basically would dress up as Native American. He had the huge headdress on, and would come to games. And, I mean, he even got inducted into the fan section of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2000. For people that don't know how much of a super fan he was, just think about that. Inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame fan section. That's huge. But I bring this up because last year there was a Washington Post article where a Cleveland Indian fan who actually used to dress up kind of the same way, as a super fan, said he decided to stop dressing up and wearing the traditional clothing because he had basically got confronted by enough people that said it was offensive. So I know you said the Redskins earlier was like a logo, but I want to know, do you personally, do you get offended at all when you see people dressed up, you know, as Native American and this imagery that, you know, people think of in the traditional, I guess, you know, wear that Native American groups would wear. I mean, do you have any problem with that? Or do you think that's just people being, you know, proud of the team and proud of the heritage of Native Americans?
That's an excellent question. First of all, I was honored and privileged to meet Chief Z.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid, you saw him on TV and
right.
members of Redskin Nation, I will tell you, is so deep. I mean, there's people I literally think if you cut their veins, they would bleed burgundy and gold. So we have some
yes.
super fans and I've been blessed to meet some of the people who represent Redskins Nation. And I love every one of them because they are so passionate. I mean,
right.
we have such a passionate fan base, and to meet people along the way is such a wonderful opportunity. Now, sports and entertainment. You ask a question
mm-hmm.
about how do I feel about that. And this is where the cultural component comes into play.
Okay.
Because, you know, you look at the Seminole tribe down there, and I know they've talked to some people with the
yes.
Florida State group.
Correct. Right.
And so I think and the Kansas City Chiefs have done some things to honor some of the local Native Americans in sharing and displaying the culture. And this goes
mm-hmm.
back to my personal push of really educating not only – you know, our organization, but public in general. We're kind of in our oral history is very important in Native Americans,
right.
but we don't talk about what we did as a country because it's, I don't know, for whatever reason, but sports and entertainment go hand in hand. So somewhere
right.
along the lines where we get into the entertainment side of things,
mm-hmm.
it's okay. It's okay to do some things that get the crowd excited and you know, but from a cultural standpoint, to truly understand what wearing a war bonnet is, for example, if you truly
okay.
understood what wearing a war bonnet is, that's a sign of honor. It's no different because that's in our warrior society and on the Native American side, the number of feathers that is on your traditional regalia is a reflection of where you stood, your stature within the tribe, for example, or your warriorship. So it's similar to like the armed forces. You know, the medals on your sleeve, on your collar, on your shoulders. So,
right.
you know, it's similar to wearing something of that nature. So it's very important to understand that for those of you out there listening, you know, culturally, it's not accepted for you to be wearing something. I wouldn't wear something if I'm not a four-star general, I'm not going to wear that uniform out of respect. And so that
right.
that right there to me is a level of cultural awareness. And I don't think in any industry or any team, fans go out to really degrade any particular group. They're fans. They're fanatics. They're trying to get as passionate and show their fandom as loud and proud as they possibly can. So
right.
for me, it's just a level of education and cultural awareness. But at the same time, there's sports and entertainment. And so where we cross the line
mm-hmm.
is Florida State, for example, didn't traditionally have horses, a flaming spear, stuff like that. That's entertainment.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, for us, the cultural component, we have a beautiful culture that we have as Native Americans that we would love to share with the world. We saw our display of culture at some sporting events. Some that come to mind is the Olympics in Salt Lake City. There was a wonderful display of us who wearing our traditional regalia. Right. And so wearing it properly for the people that wear it properly for the proper reasons is one thing. Setting in
right.
different situations is another thing. So I think it's just a level of education and not being uber sensitive. And some of us, you know, are uber sensitive as Americans, have that right to be. But at the same time, you know, we're also fans. We're also passionate. And with a level of education, it's my personal push to make sure that our fans, our members of Redskin Nation, and certainly the staff here, understand, you know, what's entertainment, what's culturally acceptable. So I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. It does. And I want to point out something else, though. I mean, I think you touched on it. And again, I know this is your opinion. And, you know, I'll give a full disclaimer. People hear me saying Washington Redskins, and I know I've talked with you about this before, but a lot of journalists have actually said, you know, they'll just call them Washington's team or, you know, another name, basically, because they feel that part is the Redskins part, of course, is offensive. That's what they feel. I say mm-hmm. I'm still saying it because, you know, you have both sides of the issue. And I've heard from people like you who say, you know, it's more about honor and pride. But I want to know, what do you say to those people, Robert,
who are kind of suggesting that what if the Redskins just change their name? But, of course, you know, Dan Snyder said he would never, and that's the Washington Redskins owner, for those that don't know. He said he would never change the name. But, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you want the name to always be Washington Redskins? Or, you know, if people have put in the name Warriors, and there's some different suggestions. But what do you think about that? I mean, do you think the name needs to stay Washington Redskins, or do you think the name needs to be changed to kind of support some of the popular opinion?
Absolutely. The popular opinion is clearly 90%. The Washington Post released a poll. The popular opinion is Washington Redskins is just fine.
Right. So you're like, hey, there's nothing that needs to change.
Absolutely. So, the recent post poll that went out and surveyed Native Americans, and again, it's poll after poll after poll shows the majority supports the Washington Redskins name. And I will say this is, the Redskins need to stay the Redskins. When Mr. Snyder came out and said the Redskins will never change their name, from a business standpoint, it really gave me a sense of direction, because I now know that my leadership really supports something I believe in. So that, on his watch, will stay the way it is. And I really, I'm passionate about the Redskins. So
right.
It's important to understand the history of the name and how it all came about at the time. So we worked with the Smithsonian, senior linguists out there, in trying to find out, well documented that the name, we created the name. Native Americans created the name. So the translation is, we call ourselves the Red Men, the Red Road. We follow the Red Road. We're part of the Red Nation. And today, even today, I paint myself, my tribe, tribal people use the color paint. I talked about those four colors. The color red is also significant, and we use traditional paint to cover our bodies, to paint our faces, and cultural ceremonies. So we refer to ourselves as the Redskins men, Redskin men. And it's documented in the Smithsonian, in their research, found the word was to be benign. And at the same time, there was words back then that culturally today may not be acceptable in terms of how they're used. But it's really the meaning, and
right.
To me, it's really the what's behind it. And when they say hail the Redskins, that's out of tons of respect in who we are as people. So
right.
I'm proud to be a Native American. I'm proud to be a Redskins fan. I'm proud to be a Blackfeet man. And so we, as Native Americans, we don't go around calling each other, Redskins or Brave or Warrior. We call each other by name. Hey, Paul,
right.
How you doing? Hey, Chris, how you
right.
doing? Right? And is he a member of what tribe? That's how we identify ourselves with the 600 tribes I talked about. He's a Blackfeet guy. He's a Crow man. He's an Apache guy. And that's how we identify ourselves. But, you'll ask any Native American that I know, they're proud. They're proud of their heritage, proud of who they are.
Right.
So I was asked about changing the name early on.
Mm-hmm.
I asked, why would you do that? And he said he's not going to watch our games. He's not going to buy any product because he supports Native Americans. And I truly want you to tell this, and I hope this stays in your story today, Kelsey. Is that if you really truly want to help Native Americans, come with me to the reservation. Come visit a reservation where, like mine, where the economic factor is terrible, where the economic development, there's no jobs. If you truly
right.
want to help and you're in a capacity to help, come see what's really going on in our backyard. And I think we can do that. If you really want to help Native Americans, come learn about us. Learn who we
right.
are, because you're not going to find a people that is quick to share, more passionate about love, more passionate about each other and food. And it's similar to the African American culture, where we really had food and laughter was our, mainstay. So
hey,
it's not it's not a football team name. It's not an imagery of a sports team that really, to me, is what's really impacting Indian country one way or the other. So I think with the organizations that you talked about before, for them not to use it does absolutely little to help our people, Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
right.
go visit the reservation. Let's all go together. I would be honored to join forces of anybody that's against the name or imagery and all that stuff. Let's go talk about the reservation. Let's go see what's going on. Because I guarantee you, 9 out of 10 that support the Redskin name or don't care one way or the other,
right.
There's 10 out of 10 people that would support helping once they saw what's going on in the reservation. There's no running water in some situations. There's no sheetrock on the walls, no insulation. We visited a reservation where these kids didn't even have coats, and it was like 20 below. And they didn't have coats because they couldn't afford coats.
Right.
So come see what's really going on.
I mean, how do you find out about, you know, going to a reservation or even helping a reservation? Like, you know, Giving Tuesday, for instance, just passed. So what would you say to people, you know, that want to help or, like you said, want to go learn? What's, like, the first step that they should do? Because I think especially here in D.C., most people probably don't even know where the closest reservation is. And I don't think that's their fault, but it's just an education thing. So, you know, what would you say to those people?
It's a little different because the 600 different tribes are spread out across the country. So what looks like a reservation in southern Florida doesn't look like the reservations. The reservations I'm very familiar with are in the west of the Mississippi. And so those ones are a little different. Everybody hears about Indian gaming and casinos and saving the Indians. That did nothing for a lot of tribes in the rural areas, in the rural communities. Okay. My reservation has a casino, but it has done very little to bring them out of the economic conundrum that they're in. So there's certainly organizations out there. The board that I sit on with American Indian Business Leaders, we work with college students and aspiring business leaders to really provide them with scholarships and provide them with opportunities and networking bases and stuff. So I think and there's organizations out there, but in my personal goal is to create a group that can help bring that message to those individuals that are willing to help.
Right.
And address the issues. We can't solve all the issues. Don't get me wrong. We can't solve everybody's issues. It's the old, you know, lead the horse to water. You know, I'll teach you how to fish. And I think that's where we do is I'm all about handing up, not out.
Right.
And so I think it's a two-way street as well. So that's a whole nother conversation. But for those people that are willing to help, I'd love to sit down and have a conversation with them because I think there's a heck of an opportunity in Indian country. Doing business in Indian country, for example, offers a tax break. There's new market tax breaks that allow up to 39% if you invest in Indian projects on the reservation. So there's opportunities to invest on the reservations. There's tax-exempt bonds that if you buy from the tribe, if you're a foreign investor and you want to come in to do a project on Indian reservations, there's a visa program if you provide 10 jobs and start a project on Indian land. So there's all kinds of incentives that if you look at Indian country and doing business in Indian country, if you're an investor, for example, there's a heck of an opportunity to really engage and start some programs on the reservation. Now, again, it's unique, but you know, if there's people out there willing to take a look at business ventures out there, there's certainly opportunities on Indian land that I think we could take a serious hard look at that would immediately be a win-win for both the investor, for example, and a win-win for the tribe by providing jobs and you know, sparking the local economy. So there's, I hope that gives you kind of a snapshot of what we're looking at. And that's the businessman, you know, coming out in me. But I think that I definitely know the need. I'm very familiar with the need in Indian country.
Right.
And so if there's people out there listening today to your show that are willing to help, I'd be willing to connect the two dots together.
Right. Now, that's wonderful. So I hope people take advantage of that if you do want to help, because as you describe the problems, I think most people do know the problems. Unfortunately, I think sometimes people do choose to ignore those problems. I think especially because, as you said, I mean, native reservations can be anywhere. Sometimes we see them, sometimes we don't. But I think we need to bring attention to them now more than ever. And I think it's just people helping people for a common good. You know, when you help somebody else, you're helping yourself. It's not just because you guys are Native American. Just help somebody because they need help. You know, it should be just the good in you. So I love that, you know, you're doing that. I'm glad that you gave that information. But I have to ask you, you know, as you're speaking, you know, I keep thinking that, I mean, I want to see if you feel this way, but do you think you've kind of, in essence, become kind of the face of supporting the Washington Redskins name on behalf of the Native Americans that support it? And I ask that because, of course, we see, you know, petitions such as those from changethemascot.org, you know, see it as racially insensitive. But do you think you've kind of been that mainstay, that main figure, that face of supporting the Washington Redskins name, you know, in support of the Native American groups that do support the name?
Well, I don't know about all that. I just know that I'm a guy that believes in what he believes in and is very passionate about what he does and has never backed down for what he believes in, right? And so my goal was never to become a face of anything. My goal is to always believe the values that I was raised with, to make sure that I never wavered on who I and what I believed I am and what I stood for. So I never once you know, when I was a little kid, thought about becoming a fan of the Redskins to get into controversial issues or anything like that. But I do tell you what, I am a super fan. I'm a fan first, and I love the Redskins. And then that'll never change. Like I said before, the sun will rise, right. The sun will set, and I'll be a Redskin forever. So my goal, my ultimate goal is to continue to follow that road. And my job is not to be a face of anything other than just be a strong Blackfeet man and a good father to my kids and do the best job I can for this organization, which I will say this is I'm very proud of this organization and what we stand for from what I know of the leadership team here.
Wow. Well, very well said. And now, Robert, moving on all this serious talk, now I want to get to the fun part. Let's quickly discuss the upcoming game tonight against Dallas. Now, of course, Robert, we know the Washington Redskins are looking to renew their rivalry with the Cowboys tonight. Of course, they're kind of looking for revenge since their last meeting that Dallas won back on October 29th in Week 8, 33-19. Tell me, what are you looking forward to this game? Of course, we know both teams are kind of injury-plagued. The Cowboys, people aren't expecting them, Robert, to have a big game with Ezekiel Elliott still serving his 6-game suspension. Of course, they do have Alfred Morris, but I think so far they've really been good running, but I think they're really not scared about Dak Prescott since he's also been struggling without having Zeke by his side. But tell me, I mean, what do you think the Redskins are going to do tonight against the Dallas Cowboys on this big primetime game?
Win. That's the short
it's
answer.
Simple, just
win.
One word. You have a final score prediction?
You're getting me so excited on game day. I get chills. I try to keep it even keel, but score prediction is we'll have one more point than them.
Okay.
My heroes have always killed Cowboys.
Hey. So there it is. Point blank simple.
Yep. We, I love this team to death. The heart they've displayed year in, year out with all of the, game in, game out with all the adversity they have faced truly are warriors because they've had injuries. We've had this team is phenomenal and just keep bouncing back. This team seems different because they've had shown some tremendous heart. You know, on the sidelines, on the field, guys just keep coming up and next man up. So, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are going to have all they can handle tonight. I guarantee you
right.
that because we're going to bring tons of heart. And we're on the, in my mind, as a fan, this is the fan speaking, we're on the verge of a 6-game in a row run. And I'm excited about
right.
that. And we're going to take care of business tonight with the Dallas Cowboys. And we love this game. This is the best game. This is the best game of the season, right? Both
right.
sides.
I mean, who doesn't love
my
it?
Best
Cowboys
friend,
and
my...
yeah.
So, no prediction. We're going to come out on top. That's just. I'll just stick
I like
with that,
that
one. How's that?
That's simple. See, come out on top. And of course, for those watching, I mean, it's an NFC East rivalry. Both teams are at 5-6, and they're both fighting to keep their playoff hopes alive. I don't think you could have wrote a better storyline for that game. But something, Robert, I love that the Redskins are also doing, as well as other teams, are this cause that will actually happen tonight. It's hashtag My Cleats, My Cause, where players actually get to wear cleats supporting different causes, you know, that are near and dear to their heart. We talked about earlier how Native American issues are near and dear to your heart. Well, we have Kirk Cousins supporting the International Justice Mission. Breshad Breeland is supporting Music Unites. Nick Sundberg, who I actually talked about on the show, he's supporting his cause, Loads of Love, through the Washington Redskins Charitable Foundation. So, tell me, how excited does this make you, you know, seeing the Redskins support just what's near and dear to their heart this game?
What a phenomenal program. I can't say enough yeah. about this program because it allows players the freedom to really express themselves in something they're passionate about, right?
Right.
So, every one of our guys, everybody has a unique story. And every one of our guys
right.
has the opportunity to really show that. And so I really applaud the league for what they're doing with this program. And our guys are no different. You know, Kirk is a wonderful character guy. I love, what he stands for and all our guys and what their causes are. So, we've got a very passionate team about the community. We're as players and coaches and fans and staff, we're out in the community trying hard to make sure that, we're really giving back. And that's really what this is allowing us to do. And in our own unique way.
Right. I mean, I love this is one of my favorite times of the year because, as you said, players get to express themselves. We get to see all these different causes. And I think people forget, yes, players, they make a lot of money, but they're human, too. And guess what? They give back. And these organizations also, get to get a little publicity, which will hopefully help them to get some more money and so they can continue to do the good work that they do in the community. But now that makes me transition to the last thing I want to talk with you about, Robert, and that is the 10th anniversary of the death of the Redskins great Sean Taylor, who I know, especially in this DMV area, back when he was, when he did die, I mean, it hurt so many hearts here in D.C. He's such a promising young star. I mean, tributes came in from all corners of the NFL on this 10th anniversary of Sean Taylor's death. And the Washington Redskins, I know they did an ultimate highlight video of the fallen superstar. And then they also painted the number 21 outside of FedEx Field in honor of Sean Taylor. For those that don't know him, Sean Taylor played football for the University of Miami and the Washington Redskins. He died 10 years ago on November 27th, 2007, after being shot down in Florida. So, I mean, just tell me, Robert, I mean, what were your just, you know, thoughts of Sean Taylor? I mean, such, as I said, one of the greatest, I think, to play the game. He died so early. I think, you know, it was just so sad. But just tell me, what are some of your favorite Sean Taylor memories? I mean, just tell me, what are your thoughts, you know, on this 10th anniversary?
It's hard to believe, first of all, 10 years.
Oh, my gosh,
I remember the day. I remember the day, and many members of Redskin Nation will tell you their unique story, but I wasn't working for the organization, but I still was a big member of Redskins Nation and family.
Right.
And we are
right.
Family. And I remember crying. I remember going to sleep, seeing the headlines, and I waking up hearing the news, and I was crying. And,
wow.
You know, talk to people within the organization that have been here for 20 years, and he told me, he said, there's a couple days in Redskin history that the world stood still. And that was one of those
right.
days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the shock and awe was similar to, and from a selfish perspective, my brother was shot and killed. It was similar to that
oh,
when I was 19
okay.
years old. But Sean, his impact today, I was looking at some of the people and some of the players and their stories on some of the throughout the league of the impact he had as a player. And you look at the
right.
evolution, and we'll never know how great he really could have been. But I can tell you what,
right.
some of my greatest memories was the hit in the Pro Bowl. No question. That was the greatest
yes.
hit on the punt.
Yes.
Yes. The return punt
that.
Against the return punt block field goal against the Cowboys. Awesome.
Yep.
Which is, by the way.
I remember that. Yep.
But the what he brought to the game, and I'm privileged to talk to his family today and members of the organization and learn
mm-hmm.
about him and truly some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that he started to really bring to the field and is awesome. So, you know, his leadership on and off the field was really becoming something that the Redskins, and it took us a long time to get over
right.
it on the field. I mean, from a player standpoint, but also from a you know, emotional standpoint. So, you know, Sean really has a huge impact. And I'm standing here, sitting here, literally looking at his sign in the stadium.
Okay.
You know, and the impact he's had 10 years later is phenomenal. It's just great. So, you know,
wow.
I hope and he loved, do the research. He loved Dallas Week. He wasn't very vocal with the media and you all.
Right. He was more
Dallas
soft spoken, right.
Dallas Week, he came out. He was like, it's on. There's some great
wow.
quotes that he's put together. But some of my fondest memories was truly Sean and the tenacity he brought. And he was just a great athlete. You know, and there's like Coach Gibbs had said, God created some men to be football players. And he was one of them, truly.
Oh, my gosh. So well said. And, I mean, you said it's Dallas Week. Hopefully the players, you know, play with his spirit inside of them, because I mean, he was a true competitor. We talked about battling and competing earlier. Sean Taylor was the embodiment of that. But that's all the time we have for today. Robert, thank you so much for joining me today on Listen In with K&N. It was a blast having you on. So thank you so much for making time.
Hail to the Redskins.
Hail to the Redskins. You can't end any better way than that. And to everyone listening, I hope you had fun, learned something, and of course jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every Tuesday and Thursday for new shows that drop online at foxsports1340am.com and kelseynicolenelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at The Real K Nelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.